Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
New U.S. sanctions on Iran took effect today, 6 months after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the international nuclear deal.
The sanctions target Iran's shipping, financial, and energy sectors, all key to the country's already struggling economy.
The bombs, which the FBI referred to as improvised explosive devices, were sent to the FBI's bomb laboratory in Quantico, Virginia.
We're in Mexico again tonight as thousands of migrants try to find a faster way to the U.S. border. The White House says it's now getting help from the Mexican
Breaking news out of Pittsburgh. The man accused in the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh is pleading not guilty, and he also wants a jury trial. You can see he's facing a 44 counts.
In the final seconds before the Boeing 737 MAX crashed into the water, it was traveling at more than 500 kilometers an hour. All 189 people on board were killed.
You've now entered the House of Mystery.
Crime, conspiracy, history, and science.
With your hosts, Al Warren, Mike Brown,
Julie Sab, Michael Butterfield,
Dr. Joseph Usinski, and Michael Hawley.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course I'm Al Warren, screwing with the controls. And on the East Coast, we've got Mr. David Rose Martino.
You're back to Rose again.
Well, it has to be Rose, because, I mean, who else would go see a Frankie Valli concert?
In the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. You were the youngin' there.
I was. Well, there were a couple of people there who were younger than I was, but
just mistake. They walked in by accident.
they didn't know where they were.
They were looking for the Motley Crue concert, and they walked in, and it's like, what's this? Well, no, actually, I will say I'd give you a bad time, but I think that's one of your really charming features is that you actually took your mother there. Yeah, well, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. A lot of people. We'll make fun of it, but I think that's a great thing to do. So there, I'm giving you a pat in the back.
I'm taking it.
When I can. Yeah. It doesn't happen often, that's right.
That's right.
That's right. Okay. Well, but okay, so you have to behave yourself today. We've got a serious show. We've got the FBI is in the room.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. And they probably were at the concert with you watching every movie.
They were
probably a lot of drug dealers there. No. Anyway, not going to go there. So we've got a retired FBI agent. That's Kathy Stearman. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Al. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
Hopefully you say that at the end of the show. You know, they'd be busting the studio. Wow. So you've had quite the career. How did you decide that you wanted to be in the FBI? Like, what brought you to that agency and decided to go for it?
You know, I didn't grow up wanting to be an FBI agent. I had no idea what an FBI agent was until I was at least in my teenage years. I didn't really get to watch a lot of TV, so I didn't get to see those special agent programs on TV. It was actually when I was finishing up my college years and working on an MBA, and I had originally planned to be a surgeon, and I realized as much as I love science, I did not want to be a surgeon. I didn't really like being around sick people all that much, not because I mind sick people. It's just I didn't really want to. This is going to sound terrible, but hear their complaints. So, yeah, that didn't suit me very well in the FBI. But anyway, so, I really wanted to do something different. You know, I wanted to be adventurous and do something that women just did not get to do, let alone want to do. And then a family friend of mine said, you know what, you really should consider, you know, the FBI or the CIA or the State Department, because they all have offices overseas and they are all taking women now. And I really think that this is right up your alley. So I started applying to all of those agencies and Secret Service as well, which I do write about that experience in the book, and ended up, with the FBI. You know, they were the ones who called me first and said, hey, would you, went through the process, the interviews and the background investigation. And then after I did all of that, they called and said, okay, we have a slot for you at the FBI Academy at Quantico, Virginia, which is where the Marine Corps base is. So I sort of stumbled into it. It wasn't a lifelong plan, that's for sure.
Well, no. But it seems to be, that's quite a difference from what you were doing in school. Because I'm just trying to figure this out, because I would never, jump into being in the FBI. So there must have been some sort of, was there an attraction to being policing or something about the FBI that you found intriguing?
It wasn't the policing so much as the investigative part, I think. I think that I've always loved mysteries and, I think I wrote about this in the book when I was a little girl. I love to dig up things. My initial love was going to be archaeology, and I was always digging up stuff and trying to figure out who put it there, where did it come from, and, who were these people that lived where, I grew up hundreds of years ago. So that was always intriguing to me. And then later I loved learning about archaeology and the mysteries of other cultures and societies, and I think that's probably what drew me to the FBI when I was initially told about it. Plus, I really liked the fact that not a lot of women were in the FBI at the time. And to me, that was a challenge. And I always love a challenge. And I'm the kind of person, still am and was when I was a young girl, if you tell me that I can't do something or I won't be able to do something, then I always thought to myself, well, then, you should go stand in the corner and just watch me do it. It was probably more of a challenge, too, than anything else. I wanted to be different, because I knew that somewhere inside myself there was this different person, this different young woman. I didn't want to get married and have kids and do the whole normal family thing. I just didn't. To me, I wanted to run as far away from possible from that kind of life. And I did.
Oh, good. I mean, I did too. Now, your book title, It's Not About the Gun, and it's Lessons from My Global Career as a Female FBI Agent. So It's Not About the Gun. That's an interesting title. How did you come up with that?
When I was writing the book, I started to write about the fact that when I was overseas, I didn't carry a gun. You can only, as an FBI agent, a legal attaché can only carry a gun if you're in certain countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and places where you're more likely to need one. But in 99% of the LEGAT offices overseas, the LEGAT personnel, they're not allowed to carry a gun. We don't have the authority and the jurisdiction in other countries to do so. So I became accustomed to not carrying a gun, and I would go to all the countries that I covered in South Central Asia and China and Mongolia, and I was by myself a lot, you know, after hours, or, I traveled by myself a lot. And I got accustomed to not being concerned or worried about someone shooting me. I mean, here in the United States, I mean, let's face it, you know, you can go to the movie theater and somebody can shoot you. You could go to a restaurant and someone can shoot you, or a concert. And I got accustomed to feeling safe from people who were always carrying guns. And when I came back to the United States, I realized I came back from living in China, and I was in San Francisco, and I realized that I had to sort of carry myself differently once I came back from overseas. That, you know, I could be at a stop sign and look at somebody the wrong way, and whatever bad day they're having or whatever, you know, they're thinking, they could shoot me if they have a gun. And that can pretty much happen anywhere in the United States. And so I really started thinking about the gun itself and having to carry that as an FBI agent throughout your career. And interestingly enough, one of the first questions that people would ask me when I was overseas, because they're very, very curious about the FBI, and the FBI is highly regarded, and one of the first questions that I would always get is, do you really carry a gun? And you could tell by the question that they really thought that was cool, because all of the countries I covered, people don't carry guns. You know, now, yes, there are terrorists and there are bombers, but that's a little bit different. And so I realized that there's this fascination, not just within the United States with guns, but overseas. And that really started to trouble me. And I started to look back at all the things that I did when I was overseas as the LEGAT that didn't require a gun. Absolutely nothing I did required a gun, unless I was going to be one of the main people left at the embassy to protect the people inside the embassy. And then, of course, as I say in the book, the Marines were going to provide me the weaponry in order to be able to do that, to be that person. So it just sort of evolved into thinking about what carrying a gun means, and there's a huge responsibility in carrying a gun. And I think that most people don't think about the responsibility. I think they just think about, ooh, it's really cool to carry a gun. And the reality is, it's not that it's cool to carry a gun. There's a huge, huge responsibility involved. And that really hit home for me when I came back to the United States from living for years overseas without one.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Phoenix will not be airing this show.
I don't imagine a lot of places in the United States will be airing this show because, you know, let's face it, we are a gun culture.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the only area that seems to avoid airing that type of show. I always wonder, so not only not carrying a gun and the way the other countries are. It's very unusual for Americans. I don't think they realize unless they're there or doing it. What do you think the most surprising thing about being an FBI agent is to someone that has never been in that kind of career? What do you think it would be?
For sure, how much paperwork you have to do. You people watch these TV shows and the movies and they think, oh, it's cool. You're out on the street. You're always doing all this stuff, or you're sitting in front of a very high tech computer that can solve your case in about an hour, which is so not true. But they never show FBI agents writing up reports or, you know, doing their travel vouchers and things like that. Because everything you do, you know, every person you go out and talk to, every surveillance you do, every investigation you have requires a ton of report writing. And, you know, I was laughing, you know, a couple weeks ago with someone on this very topic. And I said, you know, the only TV show I have ever watched that had an FBI agent writing a report was Dana Scully on The X-Files. And if you'll remember, at the end of every episode, she would be writing her report about, you know, what happened during that episode. So I think that's probably the biggest surprise that most people just don't realize is just how much writing an FBI agent does.
Oh, yeah, I could imagine. But that gets you ready to write a book.
That's what I told people. That, because I actually had someone say to me, well, what makes you think you can write a book? You were just an FBI agent. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the actual, you know, we wrote so much. And as a legal attaché, you're not just writing reports. You are writing talking points for ambassadors. You're writing talking points for Director Mueller, the Attorney General. You're writing up research papers for all of the same. And depending on what's going on, you may have an ambassador call you like 7 o'clock in the morning. And I need for you to write me a press release on this investigation. And so you learn, especially as a legal attaché, that it's not just writing a report. It's not just the facts, ma'am. You have to sort of cater to whatever audience you're writing for. And those audiences differ from country to country. So I had to learn to not just write reports where, you know, you write the facts, but provide information in a way that a different country, different, you know, law enforcement and different media would understand the investigation or whatever it is that whatever message you need to get across to them.
What is the day in the life of a legal attaché? What is that like?
Oh, wow. I every single day is completely different. And every day, inevitably, I would come into the office, or I would already be there from being there in the middle of the night, with, you know, a sort of plan in my head. And I don't think there was a single day that I actually got to work on my daily plan. I handled so many different investigations in India. From most of it was terrorism, but there was a lot of international kidnapping. I would help other countries, like if there was a bombing in other countries. Like, for instance, there was a bombing in the Maldives when I was the LEGAT, and Americans were not involved, and generally the FBI doesn't get involved unless an American is hurt or killed. There were no Americans involved, but part of the LEGAT's job is to assist your foreign counterparts if they request that of you. So there was a bombing in the Maldives, and they asked me if I would get the FBI out to the Maldives to help them process the crime scene and to find the perpetrators. So I did. You know, there's a special team that flies out, and they travel to foreign countries at the request of the LEGAT and the foreign country. And they go and they do investigations and crime scenes and things like that. So I did that a few times. In China, there were, unfortunately, a lot of international parental kidnappings. And what I mean by that is, let's say an American citizen, usually a man, sorry, guys, goes to China and he finds himself a Chinese wife. And he brings her back to the United States and they have a child. And then generally what happens is the Chinese wife, just once she gets her citizenship or green card, then she packs up her suitcases along with the child. She goes back to China to live with her family. And the child, though born in the United States, is considered by the People's Republic of China to be a Chinese citizen. And it doesn't matter if that child has an American passport. They say, if you're Chinese, then you belong here. You don't belong in the United States. So unfortunately, just about every international parental kidnapping case that I had, the parent never, ever got their child back because China just refused to cooperate because they did not recognize that that child was an American citizen, even if that child had a passport. So, you know, I did a lot of things like that. Terrorism in both countries, believe it or not, I know a lot of people probably wouldn't think that of China, But yeah, I mean, on a daily basis, it just changed from day to day. I would assist other U.S. government agencies in doing things. I met with my other counterparts quite a bit, and who were like my equivalent legal attaché from Australia and the U.K. and New Zealand and places like that. And we would get together and share information, or if there was something urgent, you know, we would share information if we could. So yeah, it was, every single day was completely unexpected and exciting. And I still had to do all that paperwork.
Should have hired someone, Scully, for that.
So I wish.
So when we, okay. So when we get to this, before we get into some of the, more, let's say, challenging aspects rather than negative. Because not only is it a challenge, I guess, being in a, as you said earlier, man's world, so to speak, being in the FBI or a policing agency like that, especially when you start it. But when things come up, when like just recently, because Phoenix won't play us anyway, so we could talk about the dislike of, let's say of a president toward the FBI, or when someone in government is talking down about FBI, does that make you feel like a little bit under more pressure than ever?
You mean me personally in writing this book?
Yeah, like because the way that the way it turned in the last, it seemed like there was. I've heard a lot of negative talk about the FBI and the CIA and stuff like that, and there's a lot of banter going on. It wasn't the best. So with that kind of negative talk around that, are you worried about kind of coming out and going, listen, I'm an FBI agent?
I'm really not, because I think I got accustomed over the years when I was an FBI agent that there's always someone who doesn't like the FBI. Believe me, I've had doors slammed in my face. I've been cursed at. I've been spit at. When people find out that I was an FBI agent, especially when I was in California working out of the San Francisco office, because there are a lot of people in California, at least at the time, that are far more liberal and looked at the FBI as someone who's reading their phone messages or following them or whatever they thought that the FBI was doing, which is not true, but. I was very open in my book about how my opinion and how I feel. And I will start this by saying when I was an FBI agent, I absolutely had no idea what other FBI agents were as far as their political affiliation. I had no idea who was a Democrat. I had no idea who was a Republican. My very best friend, who was also my maid of honor, I had no idea whether she was Republican or Democrat until we were both retired. We just didn't talk about it. No one I worked with talked about politics. The job was to protect the American people, and it didn't matter if those American people were Republicans or Democrats. Now, come forward a little bit, and with the election of Donald Trump, I think that changed. And the morning after Donald Trump was elected, and I was still in a major state of depression, I said to my husband, I said, I am afraid that Donald Trump and the way he behaves and the fact that he thinks he can say whatever he wants and he has and still get elected, I'm concerned that that's going to give those men who have harbored those same feelings but have just sort of kept them tamped down, my concern is that Donald Trump is going to give all those men the right in their minds to say whatever they want and behave however they want. And unfortunately, I think that we've seen that in the FBI. I think that even in the FBI, this was not like this when I was there, but I think that there are some agents who decided, well, now I can be more political and I can voice my opinion and maybe try to skew an investigation a certain way because this is the way I want it to go versus the way it actually should be, a more balanced viewpoint and a more balanced investigation for all American people, not just the ones that I agree with. So unfortunately, I think that the FBI has changed a bit in that regard. And I do believe that Christopher Wray, hopefully he's going to tamp down on that type of behavior. I don't really know. But I can honestly say that it wasn't like that when I was an FBI agent. And I truly believe that the ridiculousness of what's gone on in our government and the White House since 2016 has contributed to the way that the FBI is viewed. Some of it is not warranted, and some of it is warranted, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a strange time. I never expected to see that in my life, but wow. So when you got into the FBI, how many females were there? Was that kind of, it was pretty much almost nothing, right?
There were about 600 women in the FBI at the time, with about 10,000 agents, I believe, maybe 10 or 11,000 agents total. So there were very few of us, and I have to say, though, when I went through Quantico's, the new agents training academy, it was a lot of fun. I mean, my fellow male agents in my training class, they were fine. We had a great time, and some of them I'm still friends with all these years later. The main thing that gave me the biggest challenge was my firearms instructor, and he was adamant that I was not going to pass that course. And he tried his best to get me kicked out. And I don't write this in the book, but later, after I had graduated Quantico and was in my field office, I went back to Quantico for a conference, and I saw him in the hallway. And of course, I was just like, so what are you up to these days, you know? Because I thought, okay, I'm already in the FBI. You can't do anything to me now. And he said, well, Spearman, he goes, I'm doing my job. Just got myself another woman kicked out of the FBI just a few days ago. And then he just kept walking down the hallway. I mean, he just did not want women in the FBI. And unfortunately, I think that there are still some men like that. Because in 2019, there was a case reported in the New York Times. There were 16 women who had gone through training at Quantico on the firearms range, had experienced some type of sexual harassment. So people ask me, oh, has the Bureau changed? Absolutely. Yes, it has in some ways. But in other ways, it hasn't.
What was it like or what was the training like to become an FBI agent?
It was pretty rigorous. I don't think it's quite as rigorous now as it used to be, but we did, our days were divided up into three. You know, one was a classroom, one was firearms, and the other was physical fitness. And physical fitness could be anything from boxing to wrestling to learning the how to defend yourself against other, you know, like if you get into a fight, we would go out running. We would climb ropes. We would do obstacle courses, a lot of running. And we spent, well, some of us didn't have to because there were a few, you know, former Marines and Navy SEALs in the class. But a lot of us spent a lot of time in the gym after class, lifting weights and running around the track.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And just really trying to improve our physical fitness. So some days you might walk into the classroom thinking, okay, today I'm going to be in class for the next 4 hours, and we're going to have a class on investigations or how to write a report. Boring. And then as soon as you would sit down, the instructor would come in and say, surprise, surprise, it's a beautiful day outside. We're going to go back to your rooms, change into your gym clothes, and we're going to go out and run, you know, 5 miles, 8 miles, 10 miles, or whatever it was they had decided, whatever punishment we had deserved to get that day. So, it was fun, though. I mean, I wasn't a great runner, but everything else I loved. I mean, I was really good at shimmying up those ropes. So whenever we had to do obstacle courses, and at the very end of the obstacle course, you know, we would have these contests, and the rope would be at the end. It would be maybe 25, 30 feet in the air. And my team would always put me as the anchor, and they would toss me over, you know, all of the walls to get me to that rope first, because they knew I could climb that rope faster than anybody else pretty much in the class.
That's interesting. You know, yeah. Surprise, surprise. That's Gomer Pyle, isn't it? So what is it that you want people to get out of the book? Like, why have you written the book? And so when someone takes it home, reads it, besides, of course, some of the stories and information, is there an underlying kind of subtext that you want people to appreciate about your book?
I wrote it. I initially started writing it because people like, oh my God, you've got great stories. You should tell those stories, write them down, whatever. But after I started writing, I realized that I want the young women who come after me in the Bureau and in other male-oriented jobs, I want those young women to go into those positions with confidence and know that they deserve to be there. Because if you get into an organization like the FBI and the CIA and other more male-dominated organizations, if you get in, you deserve to be there. And I changed for the FBI. I became harder and brittle, and I learned to curse a lot more, unfortunately. And I believe I changed a good deal of myself. And then toward the end, when there were a lot more challenges that came my way, I really started to shut myself off from the people on the job. And I don't want young women to do that. I want them to know that they can go in and be themselves, and I want them to change the organization. I don't want it to be the other way around. So really, I would like to empower young women. I want them to read this book, know that the FBI was a great job. It was a job like no other. You're never going to have another job like it. But at the same time, it will have challenges. And I want those young women to stand tall and find their place, stand there, and don't let someone, usually a man, to tell them, you don't belong here. You don't deserve to be here. The other thing that I would like the reader to take away is the fact that the FBI does work overseas. You know, we have over 70 offices around the world, and those offices are doing amazing work. It's not just the CIA and the State Department that are overseas, although I will say that when you're a legal attaché and the legal attaché personnel works very, very closely with our partners in the CIA and the State Department, we really wouldn't be able to do a lot of things if we didn't work together. And contrary to popular belief, what you see on all the TV shows and movies, I have very, very good friends in the CIA. We worked very closely together. And I can say that there were a lot of things that I would not have been able to do if I had not had the support of my CIA counterparts, and vice versa. So I really want people to know that the FBI is overseas doing wonderful things, sometimes in dangerous areas. But they're not just domestic. They are they're out there every day working really hard. And usually if you're overseas in a Liat office, you're working 24/7, because whatever is happening around the world and it involves the FBI, you're going to be answering that phone, even if it's 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, you're going to go into the office. It doesn't matter what time, you're going to start your day. Sometimes your days don't end for 2 or 3 days straight. And that's just the way it is. So, yeah, those are the two main messages I would like the reader to take away.
That's awesome. You know, you also worked undercover. What was that like?
It was a lot of fun. Because at the time, there were very few women who wanted to work undercover. Number two, mm-hmm. there were very few women who actually went through the undercover school. The undercover school is at Quantico, mm-hmm. and I think it's a little longer now, but at the time it was 2 weeks long, and you learn how to carry yourself in different scenarios. So I was fortunate that I had a female mentor, and she went to the undercover unit at headquarters. So she was able to get me a slot at the undercover school. And because there were so few women that were certified to be an undercover agent, that I got called out on undercover operations all the time, all over the country. And it was a lot of fun. And there were, when I first started out, I was a little bit naive. I didn't truly understand how dangerous it could be. For instance, I was working an operation in California, and it was a drug operation. And the main undercover agent, you know, he was male, and he was trying to help bring down a major drug cartel. So I was posing as his girlfriend, and we went to this event. And during that event, the head of the drug cartel happened to be there. And he started talking to the two of us, my male agent counterpart and I, and he said, if I find out that the two of you are FBI agents, I will kill you both. And it was sort of at that point that it really hit me that's like, you know, being an undercover agent is it's fun, and you get to be someone different wherever you go. But it can also be very, very dangerous. And that particular incident really hit home for me. And then there were other undercover operations where it was just plain old fun to go out and pretend to be someone else, and you can develop whatever personality you wanted, whatever personality or persona fit that particular scenario. I really, really enjoyed it until I, you know, met my future husband, and then I didn't want to disappear for days on end where I couldn't reach out to him, he couldn't reach out to me, and it did become old after a while, because most of the roles that I got to play were secondary roles, and unfortunately the bad guys that I dealt with had no regard for women. And so, you know, I got tired of being treated like a bimbo most of the time.
Story of my life. You know, how has this whole thing changed you?
You mean the FBI writing the book?
Well, actually, maybe both, because like when you come out of the end of the FBI and retire, how do you think it's changed your life from before you even just when you started it? Like, what do you think the biggest changes are?
My career toward the end presented a lot more challenges to me personally, or I should say professionally, because I got the impression that there were people within the FBI, mainly men, I should say all men, who felt like I shouldn't be in the position that I had. I shouldn't be have that high level of a position as legal attaché, and I think they just didn't want me there, and they tried to make my life pretty hard. And so that really differed from early in my career when, you know, I worked with some amazing male agents, people who became, you know, true friends, as well as colleagues. And I give so many men that I work with a lot of credit. And it really was toward the end when I started to climb the ladder, so to speak, that I was met with so many negative challenges. And by the time I left the FBI, I felt a little bruised. I was hurt, and I was angry, if I'm being honest about it. And when I left and retired, I was just happy to leave because I was just kind of fed up with the behavior that I saw and had experienced. And then after I started writing the book and reviewing my career and writing the stories that I put in the book, and the book, by the way, I wrote maybe a third more of this book than actually got published. So there were so many positive, wonderful things that happened in my career. And then I realized that, yes, at the end there were challenges, and yes, at the end I felt angry. But the reality is the FBI truly changed my life and gave me opportunities that I would not have had otherwise. I mean, how many times do you get to do things like go overseas and work in an embassy as an FBI agent and meet all the people, the wonderful, wonderful people that I met and the experiences that I had? I would never have gotten that anywhere else in any other job. So that, just sort of reviewing it and going over it and then writing it down, really brought me back full circle to why I joined the FBI in the first place. And that's because I wanted to be different. I wanted to do something different and to meet interesting, amazing, dedicated people, which I got to do. So I think the whole writing process brought me back around to the very beginning where, in spite of that, you know, nasty firearms instructor at Quantico, I loved it. I loved my job. It was great.
Is that fire instructor still alive? Or
he most certainly is, and I'm sure he has not read my book. And if he has read my book, I doubt that he would recognize himself. I think he's one of these people that, you know, has no clue as to his own, I won't curse, so his own personality.
his own, yeah. But, you know, okay, when I look at this and I see that one of the pre-write-ups about the book, about you saying you had read in the New York Times about the 16 women that were suing the FBI for discrimination at the training academy. So, and you were surprised, I guess, that they had actually come forward and were trying to do something about it. What do you think makes the agency so, I don't know, I don't want to say misogynist, but so...
Misogynist.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure.
I'll,
you know,
say it. Okay. You might not want to say it, but
well,
I'll
I
say
just
it.
Don't. No. You know, I don't like to jump in because, you know, it's not my. I have not been in the FBI, so I cannot say. But so you're I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. Could be because it's 2021, and I know this happened a while back, but it's still. It just seems so alien to me to think that a woman could do less than a man in a job if they're just as trained or if they're just as ambitious and want to do something.
Well, thank you for that. You are an unusual man.
Well, I've been told that. But I just don't understand.
I think that the FBI hires... they hire a lot of former police officers, and after 9/11, you know, they hire a lot of former military officers. And so, you know, those are two very male-oriented environments that men come from. I think that the second thing is that the FBI still doesn't hire that many women. The percentage of women has not increased that much in the last 30 years. So when you have an organization that doesn't want to have doesn't want to increase the number of women in the organization and make it more diverse, then you're still going to have the prevalence of a male-oriented environment. And I think that the FBI doesn't have a lot of women that climb the ladder. There have been one or two, there are a few here and there, but for the most part, the men in management, the people in management are men. And maybe that's because a lot of women just think, oh, you know what, I just don't even want to put up with the crap. But unfortunately, things still go on. Like just recently in the news in the last month, there have been two major investigations, one out of the Albany office, the FBI Albany office, where there was allegations of sexual harassment, sexual abuse. And in the Las Vegas office, this was unfortunately an article that talked about how a male supervisor was harassing a female supervisor by sending her photos of himself with his bureau phone with a dildo in his lap. So, I mean, wow. You just think to yourself, how stupid can you be, and how much do you hate women? How much do you feel that you have power over women to do that? So someone asked me how I thought the hiring process needs to change. And, you know, so my point was, how do you weed out misogyny? I really think that you weed out misogyny by hiring more women. I mean, our population is 50% women. So why should the FBI not be 50% women? Plus, we need more. The FBI needs more diversity. So, that's sort of my take on where the FBI is now. Has it changed for the better? In some ways, absolutely. But unfortunately, there are still some factions of the FBI that still believe women don't belong.
Wow. Well, do you have any advice for women to for women to empower themselves within a male-dominated profession?
As a matter of fact, I'm so fortunate that young women have reached out to me after they read the book. They reached out to me via my website because I have a contact page there. And I've had so many women ask me, some of them are getting ready to go into the FBI Academy and some of them want to. And I tell them, don't change yourself. You go in knowing that you deserve to be there. And if someone challenges you and tries to make you feel or says to you that you don't belong there, then you stand tall and you back them up. Do it professionally, but be firm and change the organization on your own. Don't let it change you. And I actually had a copy editor say to me when she was going through my initial manuscript, she said, do you really want to write all this in your book? Don't you think you need to tone it down a little bit? And I said to her, four letter word, tone it down? Are you kidding me? I should have toned it up. And so I tell women that don't tone yourself down. If someone tries to make you believe that you don't belong there, you tone it up, girl, and you let them know in no uncertain terms that you belong there, you're going to stand there, and you are going nowhere. But they just have to be strong and professional and be themselves. And that's how the environment of the FBI is going to change.
Good advice.
And so what is your website so people have it if they want to come look you up?
It's very easy. It's kathysteerman.com.
Well, that is easy.
Yes.
Of course, we'll have that linked as well to our website. So, you know, so that people can find you with one click who are listening.
Absolutely.
Know? So that's, you know, it's pretty interesting. So, but you have to tell us. So this whole, so when Bill Gates is putting in the chips into the vaccine, you got to tell us, how did the FBI get this to work? Like, I mean, you guys are all in on it, right?
Oh, absolutely. The FBI's in on it. The CIA's in on it. The NSA's in on it. I mean, the Chinese are definitely in on it. Trust me there.
Total conspiracy.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you must know, we haven't landed on the moon. So,
well, you know, somebody had some great video equipment, and what can I say?
Well, but, you know, we laugh about it, but the thing is, there's a huge amount of the American population that really is conspiratorial, we'll say, right now. And there's a lot of fear out there about government and government agents and stuff like that. How do you respond to that yourself? Like, how do, you know, if you're out in the public and someone starts telling you that, oh, COVID's not real, or they start telling you some conspiracy about something, you know, how do you deal with that?
Usually when somebody talks about conspiracy or what, I just sort of walk away. But usually I get, when they hear that I was with the FBI, or even when I, you know, even when I was still an agent, people would say, well, you're just, you know, you're tapping my phone and you're, you know, reading my emails. And my quick response was really, frankly, no offense. I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but you're not really all that interesting.
Yeah.
And then if the person was a little bit more intelligent, let's say, I would say, you know what? Think about it. You are one person just in this country, 330 plus million people. How many emails do you send a day? How many do you receive? Think about how many people it would take to review every single person's emails in this country every day. And with the multiple emails that go out there. And, I mean, let's just really think about that. Nobody is reading your emails every day unless you're a spy or a terrorist. And, yes, somebody might be reading your emails. But if you're just a regular person, nobody really cares about your emails. So no offense, but who cares? And I would just respond like that.
Yeah. Well, it's a little nicer than me. I always say nobody cares about you.
You just blame it on the NSA.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just sort of, it sort of just freaks me out a little bit like that. That's all. I just think people get away. I mean, the government can't even pave our roads, for crying out loud, right?
Or fix our bridges. Hey, you know, I completely agree with you. But, you know, when you have people that are looking at one news source, and that news source is very, 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 very hanging off the right cliff by a pinky nail, conservative, what are you going to do? You can't force them to try to – most people are too lazy to try to get more information. Like when someone tells me something, I'm like, really? And I will step around that one piece of information 360 degrees to find out what I believe to be is the truth, the facts. And it doesn't matter what it is. And so I always say that, you know, I look at something from a 360-degree view. Most people are too lazy to do that. And I say they are just, I'll just say it, they're lazy. It's much easier to have someone tell you how to think, tell you what to think, than to actually figure out for yourself what you should be thinking.
Well, there you go, Dave. So what's next? What's next for you? Like, where are you going from here?
I love writing. I'm going to be Dana Scully, except, you know, I guess I won't be, you know, looking into the X-Files. But no, I love writing, and I love writing about women, empowering women. So my plan is, I actually have some ideas that I'm working on, doing some research for a couple of women, obscure women from history that no one knows about or they know very little about. So I really would like to write nonfiction books about those women and bring their achievements to light and, you know, let the world know that, you know, history was founded on women as well as men. And that's the message that I would like to get out there. So, yeah, I'll keep writing as long as someone will keep reading.
Oh, just,
and publish me.
Yeah, just write anyway. Don't worry.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter, you know. I mean, nobody reads my books, and I keep on writing, and, you know, hey.
Well, see, there you go. You get the writing bug, and you just can't stop. I agree with that. I love it.
Well, you know, it's a good thing, you know. It's pretty amazing. So, you know, wow. It's been a very interesting conversation, and you'll have to come back, and you'll have to tell us about UFOs and aliens and how you guys keep it covered up for so long.
I would absolutely be more than happy to do that, but you're going to have to let me consult with Dana Scully first. she's my go-to person because, you know, she's a little bit like me. She's skeptical, so she's going to look at that UFO issue from 360 degrees, and then she's going to come up with an opinion.
Yeah, but I thought you guys were covering it up.
The FBI? Well, you know, amongst all the other things that we cover up, I think that you're probably thinking about the Navy. You know, well, they like to cover up that stuff.
The Navy's another
story.
I should say
the Air Force, you know. Yeah. The Air Force, they're the ones with all the cool planes and stuff. So I don't know.
That's true.
You might want to check with them.
No, but you know, in a flat Earth, the pilots are all in on it. We can't trust them.
Of course not. You know. Especially if they're Russian or Chinese. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, forget it. You know, Canadians are the worst.
Oh, they're just terrible. So I've heard.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, blame it on Canada. Come on, we know they did it.
Hey, you guys have a lot of room up there to hide all the aliens that have been coming to Earth for a long, long time. So I can certainly see that.
That's Quebec.
Okay, Quebec. Well, maybe not. Too cold for the aliens. They're like, they came down once and like, yeah, not going back down there.
No, yeah, don't tell them. Tell them it's cold and it's terrible. Terrible place to live. People say A.
It's smoky.
Yeah, it's smoky. But we turn on the smoke. It's fake. It's the laser beams, right?
Well, it's so that the aliens can't find you. It's literally a smoke screen.
Oh, that's right.
See, we've learned a lot. My God, you've done it all.
What can I say? I've tried.
You've done it all, and here we are, just doing simple jobs, and I just don't know what to say. But it's certainly been interesting, and we found out all about the Bill Gates and the fake COVID and the flat Earth and everything. So everyone, pick up the new book. It's not about the gun. It's lessons from my global career as a female FBI agent, and our guest was the author, Kathy Stearman. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Al. Thank you, David. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to all your listeners.
Thank you, Kathy.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Has been completed.
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.